Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. Get all the leaves on.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. And with all the crazy, wacky things going on in the world, I can think of nobody better than my good friend Trey Canepa from Short Japan Debt. shortjapandebt.com, as well as many other things. And of course, his badge was Wacko or Waco, because he is from Waco, Texas, or went to Baylor University and also at Wharton. Is that correct, Trey Canepa? Welcome aboard.
Hey, it's good to talk to you again, Todd. MIT, not Wharton.
What, MIT? I'm sorry. I knew it was one of those. I knew it was a school that was way above my level, so I threw out one of the best.
I graduated second to last in my class, okay? So don't try to paint me as too much of a smart guy. Never mind. All the central bankers all went to MIT. Well, with the exception of Janet Yellen. But Bernanke, all these other folks, Kuroda, the list goes on and on.
I don't know if I want to put myself on that list, but so Trey.
That's where I was going with that.
You know, listen. You know, they may be smart people from a book standpoint, but they have no clue. But I want to talk to you about a couple of things that I think are going on. And first of all, they're right up your alley. And second of all, I think they're very important for the average guy to understand what's happening. And you've been on this story well before it ever hit the newspapers, well before they were ever talking about it on air. And that's shorting the yuan and looking into the future, what's going to happen with this currency. Now, everything you told us the few times you've been on has come to pass. And I know that there's more on your mind about this thing right now. So take us through what you're seeing and what's going on.
Sure. So you can't watch financial news right now for more than 5 minutes without hearing about China, right? So what I have found when I talk to investors and investors in my fund, things like that, is a lot of people try to say, hey, Trey, why does it matter to me? Why should I be concerned about what's happening in China? And okay, we can argue about whether or not if China sneezes, will the rest of the world catch cold? I mean, you know, the opposite side of that is it used to be that if the United States sneezes, the rest of the world catches cold. But, you know, a lot of people say, well, we don't think it matters quite that much. Well, we can have an argument a different day for that part of the macroeconomic discussion. But I have one responsibility: to seek profit. I am a speculator. I do not apologize for it. So what I try to do is I try to deploy capital in such a way to, in my opinion, to try to put the probabilities in my favor for my risk capital where I can make some money. And right now, I think the most obvious trade out there is shorting the Chinese yuan. And the reason that I say that is this. If we look at the economic history of China, it started out with a major currency devaluation, making their labor relatively cheap to the rest of the world. So naturally, you create this labor arbitrage where suddenly businesses, naturally, if they can produce products for lower prices because their labor is cheaper, well, then naturally, that's where we're going to be buying those products. Well, that has leveled off quite a bit, and that's certainly what fueled the first leg of the Chinese economic expansion. Then the financial crisis of 2008 hit. Well, you are definitely going to gather a tone from me that I do not like China. I do not like communists. I don't like socialists. I don't like that sort of overriding, large, centrally planned government. In fact, I think it's nothing short of despicable. Okay? Well, the only way those scum manage to keep their jobs as a leader in a communist country, the only way they keep their jobs, more importantly, the only way they lose their jobs, they don't get voted out, right? So the only way they keep power, and don't ever forget, that is their only mission, is to keep and grow power. That's it. The idea that they're there for the betterment of the country is nonsense. It is keeping power in those few hands, right? So if you understand that and if you agree with me there, then you can start following these puzzle pieces one after the other. And so the only way those people lose their jobs and get thrown out is through revolution. What is the single best way to start a revolution? Hunger. Hunger starts revolutions. People are not working, and they're hungry, and they need money. That's how those regimes get overthrown. So the Chinese are not dumb. They know this. So if they see, hey, we've got to keep these people employed, we've got to keep these people eating, we've got to keep this economy growing. So in 2008, the world slows down, you get the global financial crisis. Well, now what are we going to do? What the Chinese did was the Chinese financed a massive infrastructure boom, buildings, roads, bridges, you name it, and it's all been financed by debt. So now, let's back this up and think about this a little bit more simplistically. Imagine I'm a bank, and I'm a bank in China, and I lend a real estate developer money to build a high-rise apartment / condo building. I lend him that money, and I'm waiting for that money to be paid back. The developer is going to pay me back that money. How? Well, he's going to rent out some of that property and get some income from it. Or he's going to sell some of that property, and he's going to use that and use that profit to pay down that note. Well, what happens if he can't sell or rent that property? Now, all of a sudden, he defaults on that loan. It is my estimation that you are just starting a massive round of defaults. And basically, these are loans that are going to go bad, okay? So in my opinion, you've just started that, right?
Absolutely.
So now, if you're faced with this massively expanded banking system that they're now not going to get paid back, then these banks are looking at nasty, nasty, nasty losses coming their way. What is going to be the policy response from China? The People's Bank of China is going to have to recapitalize the Chinese bank. How are they going to do it? Freshly printed yuan. Imagine that. Now, keep in mind, this story has already started. Also keep in mind that every day, and some people asked me the other day, well, the Chinese said that they don't want to devalue, so you know what they're doing? You are seeing massive capital flights out of China right now. And just the fact that the Chinese are actually changing laws to prevent the citizens of China from getting their money the heck out of there, that right there screams as a reason to sell the yuan. Because they are, what they're doing is that in order for the Chinese to, in theory, remember now, the Chinese, their currency recently got upgraded, okay? And so it's in that basket of currencies that everybody read about. So a lot of people are trying to say, well, they don't want to lose that, and so they're going to go and they're going to do everything they can to support the yuan. The only way to support a currency is by spending your existing foreign currency reserves. That is happening like crazy. The Chinese who own yuan, they want to get the heck out of it. Gee, the citizens of China want to get out of the yuan, meaning that they want to sell them with reckless abandon. Well, hey, that sounds like something I want to be short too. Awesome. So if they're trying to get out and they're depleting the People's Bank of China's currency reserves, eventually the Chinese are going to have to do, the People's Bank of China, they're going to have to do something about that. And what is the something about that? It will be a devaluation of that currency to get those currency flows to stop. The only reason it happens is the currency is overvalued. So if I own something that's overvalued and want to get out of it to something that's not overvalued, you sell it, right? And that is what is happening, and it's happening in such widespread and such wide scale that I think that at some point the Chinese are going to have to be a lot more offensive to try to stop that. They're trying to change laws in Hong Kong. You're actually starting to see them. I deal with a buddy of mine is down in Houston, and he does import-export business. And suddenly there's starting to be some problems with some payments being made from Chinese companies because the Chinese government's like, hey, how come you're sending all this money overseas? You know, what's going on here? And they're slowing down commerce. That's a bad thing. So
hold that thought, Trey.
Hold that thought.
We're going to step out here for a break. We're with Trey Canepa, and he is on a roll. And he is, geez, it almost sounds like our central banks as well. And it's something that Ben Bernanke started a while ago. But we're going to step out here for a break. Come back with, Trey Canepa from shortjapandebt.com. You miss your show, libertytalkfm.com. We'll be right back after the break with the Bubba Show.
Love runs high in this time. Give it.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with our good friend Trey Canepa from ShortJapanDebt.com. One of the smartest guys in the street gets it. He's been going through China. So go finish your thought about what was going on in Houston with your guy and the money, and we'll finish up on the Chinese yuan, or as you like to call it, the renminbi, right?
You got it. I just think that there's a major devaluation coming. You're seeing capital flight out. This is flight by the citizens of Japan. You're seeing the Chinese government start getting in the way because they see this, like, wait a minute, how come we're seeing these currency outflows? And my buddy down in Houston is in the import-export business, and payments coming from China are slowing. And he said, wait a second, why is this happening? And it's because the government is being overly protective of this international business coming out of China because they think Chinese companies are doing what they can to export their currency out and own other currencies. So to them, they want to put laws in place to keep them from doing that. Whenever I see a government try to put a law against something, wait a second, there's something going on there. They're doing it because they're trying to protect something. So if the Chinese people are trying to get out of the yuan, meaning that they're trying to sell them, why wouldn't I sell it right alongside with them? So to the individual investor, clearly there's got to be a discussion of risk. But there is a futures contract that does trade the exchange rate between the yuan and the U.S. dollar. The margin requirement is very reasonable. The reason the margin requirement is reasonable is that the contract, the price doesn't move all that much. Remember, it's pegged to the dollar. So it moves in increments when they'll change the peg. And they remember, this whole process started in August. Actually, one of the greatest lies is when central bankers and when policymakers start telling you what they're not going to do. Remember what happened back in August. This is what always troubles me about having investments in China. It's just the widespread lies and deceit by the Chinese, by Chinese authorities. Remember, they came out and they devalued the yuan by 1%. And then they had a press release, and in the press release it said, remember, now this is a one-off event. We don't intend to keep on doing this. And they devalued 24 hours later. Just a blatant lie. The Mexicans did it some time ago. You had we would never come out and devalue the peso. And then 3 days later, they devalued the peso. So the jawboning you're hearing from Chinese officials that they want to support the yuan, that is a cover. They know they're going to have to devalue. So the opportunity lies, in my opinion, in that futures contract. We got to take this on a case-by-case basis. So if you're a listener, you want to learn what I'm doing, you want to try to analyze the risk, whether it's appropriate for you, what's the potential upside, email me. We'll set a time. We'll talk about it. We'll figure out if you've adjusted for the risk accordingly, and if you agree with the thesis, then we'll try to execute the trade. But I do think there's a tremendous opportunity there. Right now, the yuan's trading at 6.5. I think it's going to 12.
Well, you've been on this case the entire time, which brings me to one other quick question. There's another thing I want to talk to you about, but I'm from the school that all this financial engineering going on globally between here, the Eurozone, and China is a total crock of crap. And eventually it's got to catch up, and it's going to create much bigger problems than if we wouldn't be involved in all these things. What say you?
The origin of devalued currencies, the origin of that is politicians and policymakers. And let's call it what it is. It is corruption. It's them wanting to keep their job. In the United States, the Federal Reserve's policy of keeping interest rates low has allowed Congress to not give a darn about how much they spend. In fact, you've got Larry Summers. I can barely say his name without wanting to throw up. You got Larry Summers sitting there saying, you know what? Our interest rates are insanely low. That ought to tell you that our bond market is the safest thing out there. Why are we not borrowing and spending more money to expand the economy? I'm sorry, did you just try to tell me that the yield on the bonds is a direct relationship to the risk of those bonds? Give me a break. Some of the lowest yielding bonds in the world are the Japanese bond, and you're talking about a country with a debt to GDP ratio of around 250%. It starts with politicians wanting to spend. You know why? Because when politicians cut spending, they lose their job. By increasing spending, they keep their job or they get elected. They figured that out a long time ago. Politicians have no intentions of cutting spending. Ergo, debt is going to continue to rise. And as long as debt's going to continue to rise, then you've got to have central banks sitting there who got their back. In our case, the Federal Reserve, Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen, have been covering for Congress's horrible decision-making for quite some time now. And interest rates are absolutely artificially low because there's no accountability all the way up to Congress, period. They're going to keep spending and keep borrowing. And why is that any different in the United States or Europe? Europe's got to make some major changes. And look at some of those yields on bonds over there. You think those yields would be anywhere near those levels if it weren't for the ECB and Draghi buying those bonds? Give me a break. Doesn't mean the bonds are safe. It just means the currencies can continue to get weaker. Well, the problem is everybody's doing the same thing at the same time. The Chinese, Europe, Japan, United States, we're all in the same boat. We are in some very, very tricky times here, no doubt about it.
So one more question on this topic. So with what everybody's doing and with the mass devalue and the spending, Trakanipa, give the Fed, give our Federal Reserve a grade over the last 8 years. What's their grade?
Janet Yellen is not empirically a stupid person. We're talking about a very, very well-educated person. The problem is she's using all the wrong models. Janet Yellen is literally sitting there holding a knife in her hand, and she thinks that she's going to drop the knife, and that knife is going to bury itself in the ceiling. I'm sorry, but there's something called gravity that's going to keep that knife from going into the ceiling. It's absolute nonsense. The Fed and central bank policy, it isn't policy. It is covering for the people who gave them their jobs. It is covering for politicians and legislators to continue to spend and continue to borrow. We don't have a functioning bond market. If you've got a functioning bond market, then as a credit rating of something goes down, the yield should go up. That would be like you would let market forces say, hey, Congress, stop being an idiot. You're spending too much and borrowing too much. We think the risk on those bonds is going up, and thus the interest rate goes up. That's what should happen. That's where you get to kind of grade how the policies are working, right? But we are nowhere anywhere near that. Look at yields in Japan and in Europe. There's no you do not have a bond market mechanism to push back on bad decisions by legislatures. It doesn't exist. And the reason it doesn't exist is because of central bankers. And we're all going to pay the price for it.
Well, and that I could not agree with you more. I think that is a major problem. I have said it from the beginning that they cannot continue, but of course they are, and they will continue because obviously the Fed, as it was originally potentially designed, is not the Fed that we see today. And of course, we have been on this case and once again proven that yesterday that the Fed has no clue. They continue to have no clue, and they continue to guide us down the path of destruction. They continue to talk about data dependent. What data are they seeing that nobody else is seeing? I don't understand it, and Trey's going to explain to us what he sees and what he's thinking. But what I don't see is a Federal Reserve that has any clue of what to do next. I don't see any opportunity, but what I do see is opportunity for all of you. And that opportunity comes from learning how to hedge your portfolio and learning how to take better care of the assets that you hold. And that's all kind of, you know, what our conversation today is about, is how to put yourself in a better position and why it makes so much sense to be in that better position when you don't have to be stuck in the position you are now. That is why I can't fathom or understand, and why what Trey is talking about today is making just so much more sense as to what is happening globally throughout the central banks and why they obviously don't have a clue. We are going to step out of here for a break, and we're going to come back with more from Trey, because, again, Trey brings us a perspective of what we look at all the time, and I think that this is something that you need to understand. But for now, we're going to step out for a break. This is The Bubba Show. We are visiting with Trey Canepa from shortjapan.debt.com. We will be right back after the break. The Bubba Show.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with our good friend Trey Canepa from shortjapandebt.com. It should be short China debt. shortjapandebt.com. I get it out. So, Trey, first of all, I know you've got some ideas. And one thing about you is you put them out, you spell them out, and you lay them out. And I know there's something that's going on within the gold market that is right up your wheelhouse. Take us through the trade in the gold market and what you're seeing.
You bet. So, right now, every time you say gold, your listeners might roll their eyes a little bit because they're going to expect the same macroeconomic story about central banks and this and hard money and owning hard assets. This is not a discussion of that. What I'm about to discuss, believe it or not, has absolutely no relationship to the direction of gold at all. So this is not going to be a six-minute rant on why gold is going to 6,000. Is it going to go to 6,000? Yes, I think so. But that's not what this trade idea is about. You've got the COMEX, which the CME Group now owns, which is where you trade gold futures. Now, this is about the time I get some emails talking about how it's a crime that the paper gold exists. I get emails about the ETF GLD and how the gold's not there. Listen, I told you before that I'm not an activist. I'm not trying to change the system. I am a speculator, and I try to seek profit. So in this case, where you've got the COMEX, do you realize, this is a report that I pulled up on January 6th, I can update the numbers, but the amount of gold that the COMEX actually has versus the number of futures contracts that are open against that gold, that relationship is 128 to 1, meaning that for every ounce of gold that they have that is deliverable, there are 128 different claims against that. 128. Now that, I realize it's a fractional reserve exchange, but come on, that is a very, very big multiple. Now, once again, I'm not an activist. I don't care. I just have identified that that statistic is, and it's probably not going to change or make it worse. So if you know, and this requires a little bit of knowledge of futures, okay, every futures contract has a long and a short. We have one person who has bought the gold for future delivery at a particular time in the future, which means if he's bought it from somebody, that means there's somebody on the other side of that contract that has the responsibility to deliver the gold at a certain time in the future. Now, if you're a rational, logical person and you're short gold, and by the way, gold futures isn't gold until it goes into the delivery period. Once you get, like, February gold is about to go into the first of February, it goes into the delivery period, meaning that if I own the contract and I hold it till the end, I can say, give me the gold, the actual physical gold. But if I have a contract for delivery in December, I can't call the other side of that trade and say, give me the gold, because it's not in delivery yet. But February gold, once it goes into February, that long can hold on to it, and he can say, give it to me. Let's talk numbers here. Right now, the available, registered, eligible supply of gold for delivery is $300 million. Now, I realize $300 million, that's not chump change. Do you know what the total open number of contracts against that same $300 million is? $48 billion. So you got $48 billion of open contracts, but only $300 million. $300 million in the world that we live in is not a lot of money. If you're a sovereign wealth fund, if you're Saudi Arabia, and you decide you want $1 billion worth of gold, that's not a lot of money. And if Saudi Arabia wanted to get it from COMEX, and they said, we'll take it, COMEX only has one-third of that order that they can actually deliver on, right? So a logical, normal person who holds the short position on one of these contracts, do you really think that they want to wait until you get into delivery and risk that one of these longs says, give it to me, I'll take it, back up the truck and deliver me the gold? Of course not. The shorts don't want to take that risk because they know if somebody steps up and says, I'll take it, they're going to be in deep, deep trouble. So what do the shorts do? Shorts don't want to carry that contract into the delivery period when it becomes actual gold. They just want to trade the paper. So when gold approaches that delivery period, those shorts roll and they get the heck out of the way. Functionally, what does that look like? For the February gold, if I'm short Feb gold and I have no intentions of making delivery, then before you get to February, I would buy the Feb, putting upward pressure on Feb, and I would sell April. That's called rolling it. That's what we used to do on the floor all day, every day when I was down in the pit, is you're rolling those contracts back, right? So if they're putting upward pressure on Feb and downward pressure on April, it's logical that that spread would narrow. I have got 6 years worth of charts on those gold spreads, and it appears to me just by looking at those charts that you've got a fairly obvious pattern that gold, as it approaches delivery, the front month will gain on the ones behind it. Now, most of the time, we're not talking a lot. We're talking 6, 7, 8 ticks. 6 ticks is $60, okay? But if you've got 10 spreads and you made $60, then that's $600. And guess what? This roll happens 6 times a year. So what I am advocating, and what I've been telling some clients of mine is that this is not a huge upside trade. But in my opinion, the way the statistics read and the way the fact that you've got such little amount of deliverable gold, why don't we sit there and do this trade 6 times a year? You buy the Feb, sell the April. When it gets close to Feb, you sell out of that spread and you move to the next one. You buy April and sell June. Then you buy June and sell August. And you just consistently turn those over. However, guess what happens now and then? Like I said, I'm trying to put this thing on at 8 or 9 ticks under and get out of it when it comes close to about even. Well, guess what? The February roll is going on right now. I saw Feb the other day trade 5 ticks over the April. So that, to me, if I put it on 8 under and it went up to 5 over, well, that's 13 ticks. Now we're starting to get somewhere. Guess where the spread December 15 versus Feb 16 went? 35 ticks premium. Whoa. So now I'm sitting there and I'm telling people, listen, I'm not trying to make a killing on this trade. I'm just going to go out there and I'm going to try to make my 6, 7, 8 ticks and be happy for it and roll it and do it 6 times a year. Where do you think those spreads could go if somebody says, give me the gold? I can't give you a reasonable price for what the market would have to pay to unwind those spreads. And I would imagine the spot month would shoot up, you know, many, many hundreds of ticks. Do I say that's going to happen? Eventually it could happen. I'm not trying to trade for that, but I'm saying that it's possible. I'm saying that this looks like an opportunity. So here's what I'll offer to the listeners. I've got 6 years worth of charts. I'll send them to you. Judge for yourself if you think there's a consistent pattern. Judge for yourself if you think this is worth trying to take the risk of capturing these 6, 7, 8 ticks, knowing that there might be an awful lot more upside if something really crazy happens at the COMEX. That sounds like something. It's not an actively traded strategy. You're rolling the thing 6 times a year. I'm not talking about day trading. So you email me. I'll email you those charts. You make up your own mind. Decide if that's an idea for you. But I like it. The charts, to me, they look like little seahorses. They start out low, and then they kind of work their way up and then flatten out. But to me, it looks like a pretty consistent chart pattern, and I'll try to do that and capture my 6 or 7 ticks. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounds like, you know, we used to call it in the grains, a silo squeeze, you know, and sometimes you get those 6, 7 ticks on a consistent basis, and every once in a while, you get a little bonus to come along with it. So that's always a great strategy, Trey. And of course, you bring good strategy. And I know you got to run, but I want to just touch base real quick. I know last time you were on, you brought together a strategy, and I know that you've oversold it, but I want to get a little update on that because I want the listeners to understand what you do and how hard you work at all this stuff, because I think it's important that they understand and how it's working and what's going on with it.
Sure. So I started a company called Bandon River Capital, and to give you the oversimplified version of what Bandon River does is I buy receivables. They're actually commission receivables in the electricity market. Salesman goes to a small business. He sells the small business a contract to buy his electricity. The small business says, yeah, I'll buy that electricity at that price for 3 years. Now, every time that small business pays his electric bill, that salesman gets a small sliver of commission, right? Well, guess what? Some of those salespeople, they want to get paid up front. They don't want to get like an Allstate agent and collect a small commission over 3 years. So what I've done is I go to that salesperson, I say, I'll buy that cash flow from you. But I'm buying these cash flows at a discount of 20 to 25% per year. Now, I bundle those cash flows together, and I sell my investors. This is a Reg D private placement. I sell notes to my investors, and those notes pay 10% and pay monthly income, and starting in the second year, it's a 4-year bond, starting in the second year, I start giving principal and interest monthly. So a junk bond fund's yielding 6.8, so a 10% yield certainly looks attractive. Well, yes, it is attractive, because currently we're oversold. We raised more money than we can deploy. So right now I have to take a break, say, all right, what are other ways that I can deploy this capital? But we're continuing to look for those opportunities because they're out there. So, hey, if I can go out and buy a portfolio of 20 to 25% yield, I take all the first losses and then I pay the investors 10.
Hold on, Trey. We're going to have to step out here for a break. But Trey is going over one of the deals that he has done and one of the things he had brought to here on the Bubba Show. And of course, we love to share everything with you because on the Bubba Show, it's all about you and it's all about your money. This is the Bubba Show. If you ever miss an episode, go to libertytalk.fm. On demand, you can get our show any day you want. This is the Bubba Show, Top of Horror. We're going to stop by a break and come back with Trey Canepa from shortcatandeath.com. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. It is Todd Bubba Horowitz with Trey Canepa, and Trey is just finishing up with his the deal that he had worked out in the previous area on the show, and we want to make sure that you understand some of the things that he can bring to you, so you check him out. Let's get back to Trey.
Now I've got happy investors. My company makes some money. The salesperson that went out and sold the electricity contract, he's happy because he gets paid up front. So we've had a lot of success. We just launched it. We just opened in 1st of December, and then suddenly we had raised too much too fast. We said, okay, let's slow down for a second here. But now we're an operating company. We are buying these receivables every single week and deploying capital every single week. So if listeners are interested in learning more about that and what's going to be available when it reopens, feel free to email me about that too. So let's cover that.
All right, so Trey,
my email address is the same address my mom has, which is trey@shortjapandebt.com. Just like the country, shortjapandebt.com. Email me there. We'll set up an appointment to talk, and we'll discuss any and all of these strategies, anything you want to know.
Check out Trey's site, shortjapandebt.com. Check out Trey. Send him an email. He's one of our guys, and Trey and I used to follow each other on Bloomberg, and we used to say the same thing. We never talked about it. We always said the same thing. But, Trey, as always, thanks for coming on. I appreciate your time, and keep up the good work, man. You're really doing some great stuff.
I really appreciate it. I look forward to being on again soon.
Thanks, Trey. And that was our friend Trey Canepa, who really brought to light things about China and why they're in so much trouble, things about the U.S. Fed and why they're in so much trouble, and some of the new things he's working on. And it's funny that right after we taped today, we saw the article on gold and exactly what he was laying out to us. But these are things that you as an investor should always be searching out, is where is there opportunity for you? Because even in times of trouble, even in times of disaster, they bring opportunity. Why do you think we talk about the rich always get richer? Because they're ready to act on potential opportunities that are brought up. And you have that same opportunity. Again, you can do that with your own portfolio by creating that kind of model and locking in your own money. But, you know, as we saw yesterday, the Fed absolutely did nothing once again and came out with their same ridiculous, crappy line, we're data dependent. I want to know, and maybe somebody out there can help me, what the hell data are they waiting for? What do they even know what they're looking at? I do know this, that they are crushing our farmers, our producers, our oil guys. Now, is that the way that this should be? Should we be the gamekeeper for the world? Should we worry, or should we continue to let destruction take place in our middle class? It makes absolutely zero sense as to what we are watching right now, because what we're watching is the crumbling of the economy and the country that we love, because we have a bunch of people in positions of power that don't get it. Okay, now, again, I want them to get it. I want it to be great. I want to be in position to be the number one nation, and we are. But we could do it so much better. And for some reason, the powers that be don't see it. Now, you can say they don't see it for the very reasons that Trey stated, that they want to stay in political office. You can say they don't see it because they just don't see it. They're blind. You can say it that they don't have a clue. I mean, all those apply. Pick one. This is a multiple choice. You can't get wrong, because all they're doing is destructing the U.S. economy. All they're doing is putting us deeper and deeper and deeper in debt, while the politicians try to remain in the spot to get their job. Now, there has to be a flaw in that theory if we continue to do the same thing over and over again. You know, as Albert Einstein said, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Well, you can go back to Greenspan, and we've done the same thing over and over again, and we have slowly disintegrated the value of our currency, the value of our jobs, the value of what we do. And all the while, taking apart the farmers, the producers in this country that are now going to be in a position to have to make this decision. And we know under duress, decisions that are made are typically never made correctly. And I find that to be tragic, sad, because where else in the world do you have what we have? Where else is there that a person can walk up, can grow up and become a Zuckerberg, a Jobs, any one of those guys that has become a billionaire from ingenuity and the ability to succeed? But unfortunately, we are stripping that ability away from our new young entrepreneurs by over-regulating, over-taxing, overdoing everything without stimulating the true sense of growth. I mean, do we not need growth? Are we past this age? Is it not important? And that is, it's been this way for the last couple of years. We're not growing. Is it, can anybody not see that the economy is not growing, that our GDP continues to fall? Can anybody not see by the quality of the jobs that are being created that we're not growing? I mean, it doesn't take a brain surgeon or a rocket scientist to see the obvious. Americans are not making the money they made. Yes, we're selling a lot of cars. Why? Because they're giving them away with no upfront finance cost. So they're forcing and they're selling money. They're not selling cars. They're selling money because they're giving you cheap money. But that cheap money is really at an effective rate of about 8%. So why is it that we can't see the destruction that's being caused by the people in charge? It's beyond fathomable that the markets can price assets themselves. The ability to have free markets, price discovery, will always give you the correct answer. An individual that is trying to read out of a book on an economic theory written by somebody who has no clue, interpreted by somebody who has less of a clue, and you're watching this not just here, you're watching it globally. So is it really the answer that the global economy is falling apart because we have no clue? I mean, please tell me that we have smarter people than this that understand the function of a business. Because certainly the powers that be have no idea of how a business functions. They have no clue of what to do next. That's why I tell you, you better get your portfolio hedged, because this is going to be a rocky road. But for now, this is The Bubba Show. This is Todd Bubba Horowitz. You miss the show, go to libertytalk.fm. Always available on demand. But for today, we will bid you adieu. Everybody have a great day. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. You saw Facebook kick some butt, but we'll talk about that tomorrow. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll see you next time. Same time, same time. The Bubba Show.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.